You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 32 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week we are unfortunately not joined by Cookie, but it's okay because we've kidnapped Peter Cooper again and expect Liam Neeson to show up at any time.
Just for the record, okay, so this is going to sound really weird, but whenever I take girls to see Liam Neeson movies, I never see them again. This has been scientifically tested. It's happened 7 times.
7?
Bloody hell.
7, because I'm that much of a ladies' man. And I now stay away from Liam Neeson movies. Bear in mind that 4 of those 7 times, the girls requested to see the film.
Oh.
The girls actually requested to see said Liam Neeson movie. And in spite of my acquiescing to their request, knowing full well that Liam Neeson was going to steal my women, they ran. I never saw them again after that.
So fair enough if one of them was Star Wars Episode 1?
One of them was Star Wars Episode 1, and they asked for it.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
Yeah, it was... Let's go through the list. Star Wars Episode 1.
Okay.
Thankfully, one of them was not Schindler's List. let's see what else. We had Battleship.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, Wrath of the Titans. Which was at least that was a little bit better than Clash of the Titans, kind of. Let's see. Love Actually. You would have thought that. You would have thought that's a sure thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, in spite of that, no. Batman Begins.
Okay.
Good film. You know, that's undeniable. You can't turn around and go, oh, you know, oh, it's a crappy movie. Obviously not gonna hook up with you after that and that. Also Taken. And in fairness, I can understand Taken because the girl that I went to see with Taken was an American exchange student over here in the United Kingdom, and she was about to go to Italy on her own. So I can kind of get on board with that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, fine, she also picked to see Taken as well. She just didn't know what it was about. She just saw Liam Neeson. It's like, oh, it's Liam Neeson kicking people's faces in. Fine. Are you sure? Yeah, it's gonna be fine. Watch it. She came out terrified. She was wetting herself, and not even in the "that's really funny" kind of way. It was actual, genuine terror.
Okay.
So yeah, if Liam Neeson's coming, I want answers.
I think you should ring him up.
What?
Someone told me I needed to write a film based on my experiences with Liam Neeson.
That would make an adorable comedy.
I think
starring Liam Neeson.
I'd want Liam Neeson in it if I was going to do it. I was going to do a play on the whole rom-com thing. Mm. I was going to call it The Edge of Neeson.
Well, Liam's lady.
Maybe I should, like, drop James a call.
Yeah.
And see if he wants to get involved on that. Because, I don't know. I think that could be a really sweet rom-com thing where a guy is basically trying for the sake of science / his own sanity, trying to essentially break a curse that may or may not exist surrounding Liam Neeson films.
Surely there should be like an anti-Neeson? Like one of the, you know, actors should be like, you know, every girl sticks to you like glue.
That could be the inevitable conclusion that somebody comes to after having some of the worst long-term relationships of their life. At the beginning of each of these relationships was a screening of a particular film starring a particular actor. And of course you would meet this individual over the course of Beyond the Edge of Neeson.
In fairness, I do have an anti-Neeson.
Ooh! Who is
that?
And
I can tell you now that whenever I see a film starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, putty in my hands, ladies aren't getting away from me if I take them to go and see a movie starring The Rock.
What would happen if they appeared in the same movie?
Well, that's a good point. Have they been in the same movie before?
Would the movie just explode or something?
I'd like to think that we'd just be friends. I'd be friend-zoned.
Okay. Yeah, that would be the ultimate balancing act there. That would be.
Yeah.
I don't
think they've been in the same film before, you know?
Do you know what, though? Speaking of...
Maybe they're the same guy. You've never seen them in the same room.
I'm going to try and link in now. Speaking of Liam Neeson, do you think he'd be the kind of person that Mr. Joel Silver would consider for his Escape from New York retelling trilogy? That's right. First bit of news for this week. Escape from New York is currently in the works for being retold as some kind of trilogy. It's not clear from what I have briefly read whether or not Escape from LA might also be somehow incorporated, but basically it'd be a trilogy of films, and the first film would set up the dystopian future, you know, what, which is, you know, just kind of ridiculous because the extended opening on the original film, you know, kind of sets up this dystopian future far better.
Yeah, I thought the first film in the series was going to be G.I. Joe Retaliation.
I'm so not watching that film.
I am. I need to be out the house on Friday, apparently, so I'm going to go and see G.I. Joe. Why not? I got a free ticket to go and see the original G.I. Joe. I thought it was utter crap. But it was free, and I went in there with low expectations, and it was all right. Okay. So I have high hopes for The Rock.
Does it pass the Catwoman test?
What's the Catwoman test, exactly?
The Catwoman test is, in order for a film to be at least considered mediocre, it has to be better than the Catwoman film that stars Halle Berry.
Oh, it's better than Catwoman.
Okay.
Can I just ask, because obviously there's the Catwoman test.
Yeah.
But was it Becquerel test?
That's to do with...
virtual test. Yeah. Does Catwoman pass the virtual test?
Probably not. There's a whole love interest thing going on.
There needs to be some kind of... The Mummy 3 test. There is no film worse than The Mummy 3.
Maybe The Mummy 2.
No, The Mummy 3.
Which was The Mummy 3 again?
Yetis.
Oh,
I was going to say, that was the one with the Yetis, wasn't it?
Was that the
Mummy 3, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Oh, yes, I've sadly seen parts of that on the telly.
I went to go and see that because, yeah, I was thinking, all right, you know what, mates around, let's go and see a film, let's go and see something awful, let's go and see Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. I went in there with the low expectations. I offer a lot of films, and that includes Doom, which I adore. That includes SWAT, which is amazing. That includes G.I. Joe, which is all right. I went in there with the same low expectations, expecting utter shite. And I came away disappointed because it was even more awful than that.
Yeah, I could see that. So going back to the Escape from New York retelling trilogy, which basically means remake. He literally has used, Mr. Joel Silver, the word retelling in the announcement. It's just kind of like, it's a John Carpenter classic. It's got, if I can remember his name, it's eluding me.
Who?
Main star.
What
of the original?
Kurt Russell, there we go, in it, and it's a classic 80s action flick.
Are they saying Kurt Russell's going to be in the retelling? Because that'd be awful.
I don't think he is, unless of course he plays like an alternative character or something.
Can you imagine old Snake Plissken going back over his amazing cavalcade of achievements in the post-apocalypse after it, all power and technology has been destroyed on Earth. Spoilers for anyone else that's seen Escape from LA. Of which I'm sure there are many.
One thing that I don't quite understand is the fact that Escape from LA is pretty much the same as Escape from New York in terms of, you know, kind of what he has to do. So making a trilogy out of it, are they going to
ignore LA and it'll just be all New York? But
they've done five movies based on Resident Evil. Come on.
Yeah, and there's no script for this yet, I think. It was a bit
that never stopped the Resident Evil films.
I mean, in a way, I feel a bit betrayed because it's Joel Silver, the guy that has produced so many classic action films, from The Matrix. I think he did Die Hard 2. This is how important he is in the action film genre. And he's looking to basically remake Escape from New York, one of the most classic films. And I know we've talked about remakes a lot before on this podcast, but I think we've reached a point now where it's just a bit ridiculous, because what would be cheaper, and I would say better to do, is to clean up the original film, maybe redo some of the sound, maybe redo some of the things, maybe, okay, admittedly go a little bit Lucas on it, but not as extensively. And re-release it in the cinemas.
I'm gonna put in against that. Now I would I have a list of films I would not be against seeing some kind of remake based on. And Escape from New York is actually on that list.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Along with The Running Man,
mm-hmm.
which I mm-hmm. think. Now bear in mind the basically what I'd like to see is, rather than camp 80s, seeing serious gritty approach, not in the really boring kind of way that they handled Total Recall,
yeah.
which is also on my list, and it's still on my list because I don't see the previous attempt as actually achieving that.
You've not done it properly. It's still on the list.
Basically, yeah. It's still on there. Yeah, I've kind of shunned that film from my mind, and also The Dirty Dozen.
Okay,
is actually on my list. In spite of the fact Dirty Dozen is one of the seminal war films, at the same time, I'd love to see a different take spun on that one.
There are a few films I think should have almost expanded retellings. So yeah. Some of them where it's just, you've got a good idea there. It's a pity you've only made a 90-minute film out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just like RoboCop. Some sort of...
Well, let's face it, it's going to be better than the film.
Or even what some of...
as in the new one that they're doing.
Yeah.
Which is like...
Or even some sort of soft reboot. You know, cause obviously you kind of get soft reboots, say, for example, Star Trek, new film. Obviously, you know, the way that they did it was going back in time, but there's probably other ways of doing a soft reboot on it.
Well, I mean, technically speaking, while they are going to be sequels, the upcoming Star Wars films are in a way a soft reboot, because it's returning to a franchise that hasn't had any activity of a major level for a while.
Would The Bourne Legacy be considered?
I would call that a soft reboot.
You could easily do any kind of escape from movie with a different character that isn't Snake Plissken.
Yeah,
easily.
I think one of the issues with trying to revisit, I mean, because it's one of those weird things about 80s and 90s films, is the interpretation and representation of gang culture, which those films have. I mean, I've watched Escape from New York. Paul and I watched Demolition Man a few weeks back, and the representations of gangs and stuff in those two films.
They're almost confusing gangs with nihilists.
Yeah.
Demolition Man is a weird one anyway.
I think that's one that could be expanded.
But I mean,
I like to consider Demolition Man as kind of like the extrapolation of the two gangs represented in the Michael Jackson movie Beat It. I'm just going to leave that with you. I want you guys to think on that one.
Because we watched, Stallone's Judge Dredd not long after Demolition Man, and it's like, it's kind of the same film.
That's true. It is a bit. It's strange how that kind of ended up happening, yet not surprising at the same time.
I was just thinking there with Escape from New York. The only real reason it would make any sense for someone of that kind of action film pedigree to think about doing a remake is if it's we want to do a film that's kind of similar, but we don't want to be accused of ripping off. So why not do the license? Why not get the license? Agreement?
They'll do it through studios that already have the licenses. They're recognized names that will make more money as a result of doing that.
yeah, it's just...
I think Joel Silver has actually got his own little production company, which is called Silver Productions. Is it Silver Pictures? Or Silver?
I thought it was Silver Pictures.
It's one or the other. It has silver at the beginning. amazingly. The thing about these episodes, I'm still keen on it. I'm not keen on it at all, I think, is what my hesitant voice is trying to tell you all.
I don't like the thought of somebody else playing Snake Plissken.
No.
He's such an awesome character. That's bad.
He's an iconic character that's had a long influence on the image of a badass anti-hero in a film.
I suppose in a way it's good that they didn't actually name it Snake Plissken Escapes from New York. In a way. So they could theoretically have anybody, but the escape from kind of thing has to be kind of there.
Young Indiana Jones was all right.
Yes.
Just saying.
What, the TV series?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was good fun.
Yeah. Equally,
I'd also like to point out that three different actors, and soon to be four, have all played Jack Ryan.
Yes.
And Jack Ryan is, like, he's the man in political thriller territory, you know?
Whose novels are those based on again?
Tom Clancy.
Mm, yeah. I was reading an article about it in... I'm not sure if it's now the latest Empire, but it was the Empire magazine that recently had Iron Man on the front. And they were sort of... in one of the articles, just kind of at the filming in Pinewood of what was part of the James Bond set or something, but they're using it for the latest upcoming Jet Reacher.
I'm kind of upset by the fact that Chris Pine is playing Jack Ryan, because I like Harrison Ford's Jack Ryan.
Yeah, but I don't think you could have Harrison Ford returning.
Oh, no. But at the same time, I liked the take of... because in the stories, Jack Ryan is supposed to be... yeah, he's in the space of 2 years, he goes from being head of the CIA to president of the United States. He needs to be middle-aged.
Hmm.
You know, so we are talking the Liam Neesons. We are talking... much as it pains me, we are talking like the Liam Neeson kind of tier, where I'm not saying this at all seriously, but the Sean Beans, or alternatively, you know, I can't say Sean Bean because he was in Patriot Games, but you know, the Sean Beans or the Jason Stathams, where you got those, you know, the middle aged but still hard ass and still able to do their thing, but carrying a certain element of intelligence. And I know with Jason Statham, you might question that. I think he's a lot more intelligent in his films than he necessarily portrays. I mean, especially The Transporter, which, in spite of all kind of laughs, is actually a pretty deep... you know, the main character is actually pretty deep in that film. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jack Ryan needs to have that certain element of depth. And, you know, the sum of all fears, which has Ben Affleck... as Jack Ryan, you know, and he's like, oh yeah, I'm just a young analyst. In the book, if I'm not mistaken, he's essentially being set up to take over as head of the CIA.
Right.
You're not going to be
as opposed to young covert CIA analyst, which is kind of what they're doing with the new Jack Ryan film. So I can kind of understand Chris Pine as doing a film which is supposed to be kind of like the origin story of Jack Ryan, but you know, at the same time, it's hard to compute, you know. Mm. So many actors playing the same character is a bit messed up.
I just think of Escape from New York, and if I was somehow involved in remaking it, who I'd cast as the equivalent of Snake. And I'm not sure if I can think of anyone. I think they'd have to have a convincing American accent.
Not Jason Statham, then.
Exactly.
They'd also be have to have that kind of husky voice.
Yeah, it'd have to be husky.
I'm just sitting here wishing that Snake Plissken wasn't called Snake, because I just keep thinking of Metal Gear Solid. Snake? Snake? Snake!
I think actually I'm going to be for someone now to next.
No, wait. I have the perfect casting.
Okay.
Snake Plissken. Eric Banner.
Okay.
I win. I won the prize.
We can all agree that the idea of remaking Escape from New York is
it's iffy territory.
It's iffy territory.
Iffy territory. That's very kind.
It's iffy territory, but
it's territory we want to get out.
Eric Banner's Snake Plissken would be really good.
Moving on to our next bit of news, sort of quick, maybe not, depends how people react. We've got Left 4 Dead 2 characters coming to the PC version of Resident Evil 6 once it's released. Rochelle, Nick, Ellis, and Coach are all coming to Mercy mode for Resident 6 on PC, along with two of the enemies from Left 4 Dead 2. Well, I say Left 4 Dead 2, they generally appear in the series, which is the Witch, and a mini version of the tank.
Tank top. A tankard.
A tiny tank. A mini tank. Yeah. Well, actually, it's not that easy.
Are we going to go a low here? A little tank.
Yeah, it was just kind of a bit... It's interesting because at the same time, he's so mini that he's probably just a bit taller than the average person. So he's looking at the video that I've seen of it, he's probably about sort of just a bit taller than the regular zombies.
So he's not really like a tank. He's like just a big dude.
He's just a big dude. Yeah, he's nowhere near the size of the tank from the actual Left 4 Dead games.
He's got the big, you know, body, the muscles.
But so does Chris Redfield.
That's true.
Maybe that's what happens.
Well, there's a wrestling mode.
I really hope that there's some kind of awesome move where Chris Redfield puts him in a headlock and just starts pounding him in the face or something. It's like, I wish you could do that in Left 4 Dead, huh?
To make up for the fact, I think that the extremely tiny tanks in comparison to the original versions, it seems that in the Mercenaries mode that a lot of them can turn up at the same time. And the Witch, obviously, you don't have much choice about that whole startling thing. By those things. I mean, you wouldn't anyway, because there's loads of zombies, lots of noise. There's nothing you can do about noise. And she just pursues you without hesitation, just constantly scratching at you until obviously you succeed in killing her.
Like Liam Neeson.
Yeah, obviously they're gonna... obviously they're gonna, you know, kind of maintain a certain level of acceptability in terms of kind of how much health enemies have. So,
yeah.
You know, kind of balance to the game.
Meanwhile, Left 4 Dead 2 will at some point be getting, I assume it's just PC, maybe console, but they'll be getting three enemies from Resi 6, which is the Lepotitsa, the Napad, and the Ogreman, as far as I can read. It just sounds like gobbledygook, even though I've played through the entire game. To be honest, I was never really concerned with the name of enemies in Resident Evil 6. I was mostly concerned with how the bloody hell do you kill them.
Could you slow down?
I was concerned with the idea of like not playing it.
Well, there was that
yeah,
too.
That was my approach, yeah.
But Paul and I bought it on launch and were determined to play the main stories through together because of the whole co-op thing, except for the Ada one, obviously.
I think we've expressed our views on Resident Evil 6 before now, so yeah. we won't go too far.
I kind of like the idea of the Left 4 Dead 2 characters coming into the Mercenaries, because I have nothing against Mercenaries. It was certainly a lot of fun on Resident Evil 5 and the multiplayer and everything online and that. And the idea of Left 4 Dead 2 characters appearing in it is kind of cool. They've all got their own little things they can do and stuff. And it does look interesting to have them around. At the same time, though, watching the trailer for it was making me think, I'm not sure if this is probably why I don't play Mercenaries, because of the precision and knowledge of the various moves and how you can shoot and stuff that you kind of need to be aware of. At the same time, it's PC, so those people have already got an advantage in terms of aiming at enemies.
Yeah. I mean, my thing is, you know, is that Valve, theoretically, you know, kind of obviously teaching Capcom about, you know, kind of, well, game mechanics in essence, yeah, from this deal. Are Capcom actually teaching Valve about, like, storytelling? Because
I don't think Valve need to learn anything from Capcom when it comes to storytelling.
No, not really.
Yeah, I think if this could be one way to an extent in that Capcom learned some stuff, that'd be great. I think
Capcom need to learn all the things.
lots of all the things.
I think especially recently, because Capcom have been previously, you know, really good developer.
Yeah. The only game that sticks out for me that they've had out in the past year that wasn't Resident Evil 6, that wasn't, and certainly was not panned in the same way, would be the Devil May Cry reboot, but then that was Ninja Theory.
Yeah, that was farmed out.
So, yeah. But then again, a whole load of Resident Evil 6 was farmed out. If interviews about the development makeup was anything to go by.
Well, it did feel almost like three different games, because they had different, obviously different styles of kind of gameplay type thing.
But anyway, there's cool stuff coming to two games on PC. Wow, amazing.
On the one hand, I will, you know, Capcom have a lot of love from me because they made Steel Battalion.
Oh, yeah.
And on the other hand, they went ahead and they made Steel Battalion Heavy Armor. And for that, they'll never be forgiven. They'll never be forgiven for that.
I think the thing I don't forgive them over was the period of time between Marvel versus Capcom 3 coming out and the Ultimate version of that coming out. That time slot between the two was pretty slim.
You're lucky you don't follow the Street Fighter series.
This is true.
I'm gonna throw out a couple of things I won't forgive them for as well. Resident Evil 5 and 6, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 can eat like all the dicks.
Oh, why is that?
Because I had to review it.
Oh.
And it's Marvel vs. Capcom 3 with some extra stuff that you can't really unlock unless you play multiplayer. Except there were no servers. So you couldn't play multiplayer.
I do remember hearing something about the horrid nature of this.
I was so angry. I wasted like 8 hours of my life playing that game. When I think about that game, I have like Vietnam style flashbacks. I'll lean back. I lean back and I look up at the spinning fan on my ceiling. And all I think of is Galactus. Also, any and all mentions of Lost Planet.
Yeah, that's
fair enough.
I think we're going to move on now to our last bit of the news for the week before we get on to the feature. It was announced last week that a very psychedelic Batman comic will be coming to digital outlets, i.e. Comixology and DC's Comixology app. That would be Batman 66. And if you can perhaps guess by the name, it's inspired by the Adam West show of the 60s.
Mm-hmm. I presume it's like everything, not just the art style.
It's the art style, it's looking like it could very well be the kind of stories. Maybe they will get rid of some of the appalling plot holes the TV series and the film had.
I'd like to see them promote them.
Or just pulsating, contrasting colours.
Yeah, it's got to look ridiculous. It's got to be completely bizarre. There's got to be surf offs. there's got to be all kinds of wrong, and it's got to make absolutely no sense at the end of each comic.
You know what would be absolutely interesting but scary at the same time? Is if they retold Nolan's feature films in this style. That would just be weird.
It would be really weird. It would be... That'd be like retelling like Batman Year One or The Dark Knight Returns in this style. Oh.
I mean, it's like the bit where the Joker... basically slams the guy's head down on the table with a pencil, and the pencil disappears. Having that as the 66 Joker instead, that'd just be, like, bizarre.
The equivalent of that would be him flicking an elastic band at the guy's face.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, because, you know, the 66 Batman can't be brutal. It's not allowed.
It's not allowed.
There can be no darkness. There is no night in 66 Batman. When I think of 66 Batman and what I'd like to see in the books, I would like to see something absolutely ridiculous. Not like running down the road with a giant bomb ridiculous, but having a surf off with the Joker seems acceptable.
Well, it's kind of weird if you consider the fact that the comics ended up emulating the TV series in the 60s, is that it's harking back to a nostalgic period that people in the end were clamoring to get away from because it was what was partially instituted by the Comics Code authority lot. And so it's weird that they're probably going to end up producing something that would pass by those censors if the organisation still existed today. I just find this kind of weird.
Yeah.
It is strange.
I'm not saying that Batman has to be all death, gloom, murder and everything. And if you've been following the main comics lately, that's kind of what they've been like. I'm not spoiling anything. Though, if to be honest, it was really hard to not miss the massive spoilers about a couple of issues ago. It's very hard not to miss them. But, you know, that's the price of being on the internet and using things like Twitter and Facebook. This is a hint that I've had stuff spoiled for me.
I would
have read eventually as well, which is annoying.
Also, how would you, bear in mind, 66 Batman, happy-go-lucky, how would you deal with the fact that Batman's parents were brutally murdered?
They probably won't cover it at all. They'll be like, that's one of the problems with like the 60s show, is that there was not exactly much of the most gripping backstory for anyone. In fact, people's motivations for doing anything in the show were pretty piss poor. It was kind of classic stuff with the sort of like villain of the week that you kind of got from the post Comics Code Authority comics. Was like, I want all the money in Gotham or something. And it's like, but why do you want all the money in Gotham? Oh, I just want all the money in Gotham, you know.
So because money.
It's money. apparently, Jeff Parker is writing the comics. Artist will be Jonathan Case, and there'll be covers done by Michael Allred. It's not going to be like a continuous thing, I believe. It's going to be something that like runs for so many issues and then ends and then may return horrifically to haunt us in our dreams.
I'm going to throw it out right now. I might actually buy this. I might actually buy Batman 66. Because it sounds really fun.
Yeah, I'm curious about it. Anyone here read Madman?
No,
I've not, no.
Now, written by Mike Allred.
Okay.
So, it was a character who was... It was a superhero, but in a mad way, and he was a bit odd. I only read the first few issues of it, but, mostly because they just disappeared from the shop I was buying them from, so obviously it did really well. But, it was... I mean, to give an example, one of the enemies was... one of the former enemies, now allies, was called the Atomics, called the Mutant Street Beatniks. So it's that that kind of weird thing. So I'm thinking, it's just the name rang a bell. I'm thinking, hang on, didn't he write Madman? And as it turned out, yes, he did.
Well, if they can make it like nonsensical in a surreal manner at times, it could be interesting.
I recommend anyone listening to this and you're worried about it, and first of all, I don't blame you, because yeah, for any affection that the original Batman series has, it was crap.
Yeah.
To be honest. But have a look at the Wikipedia entry for Madman. As in, not the CV series.
Isn't that Mad Men?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, yeah. But it's just making sure Madman...
Not the feature film Mad Max, either, because that's...
No, no.
Yeah, that's something else, yeah.
Yeah, that's entirely different. But, yeah. Have a look at it and just go, this could be more interesting, because it's less just naff and more kind of weird. Sort of 60s weird rather than 60s naff.
So, let me think, when was Doctor Strange launched in Marvel? Was that the 60s or was that the 70s? Because that's kind of
psychic. I have no idea there.
There's probably somebody listening to this going, you don't know the answer to that!
I don't like those people.
You don't. Lovely.
Yeah, listen,
Emily,
people,
apparently
get out of my house. I don't want none of you in my house. Get out.
That's a bit like what it is, isn't it?
Get out of here!
I can't stand people that expect you to memorise lots of dates and stuff rather than actually understand the content
that's
involved.
Yeah, so I mean, the whole thing about being a geek is that it's so wide and vast that no geek can hold, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of everything that's geeky.
Oh, but some Nobody try, can. And it's annoying when they try.
Yeah.
Yeah, those bastards accruing knowledge.
Yeah.
Speaking as someone who has read the retro section in Games TM and read Retro Gamer, the magazine, and shouted at the page for getting things wrong, I'm just going to stay quiet.
Yeah, you should do that.
But I mean,
that was not the first Formula One game with a pit stop.
Stop being a dick, about? Dick.
It's when people try to use the you not knowing stuff like dates and that as a thing to hold against you.
Yeah, it's
and
like,
say, oh, you're
I'm
not
a
as
bigger
much
nerd
of,
than you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, or you're not as much of a fan because you didn't know this. It's like, well, I might not know the precise air date of the first episode of X-Files, but I can trace a reasonable formula as to what the plans were between the aliens and the government through all 9 seasons.
I reckon we should name these people like the Geek Elite or something. Well, that actually sounds too positive. But... Elitists, yeah. Geek Elitists.
I'm actually going to out one right now. their name is Jonathan Lopez. And I used to be a costumer. I used to get into my cosplay quite a lot. And I was trying to offer a small piece of advice to somebody who didn't want to ruin an original Vietnam-era M69 flak vest as part of their Aliens cosplay.
Okay.
Because the flak vests were used for the smart gunners and for the dropship crews in the film. So I said, well, you know, I used to go to the conventions and I wore them with all the Kevlar plates in.
Okay. Oh.
And you know, what I did was I taped the, I basically got duct tape and I double taped over and put it, so it was back to back with the patches that I wanted to put onto the vest. I'd double the tape over and then just stick it to the vest. It would stay on. It would last at least the convention weekend. And it would look perfectly fine. Okay. You know?
And so, you wouldn't ruin the vest.
And you wouldn't ruin the vest. Sounds perfectly reasonable, right?
Yeah.
Nope.
You'd think
that's perfectly reasonable. Nope. Got called out on the material used for the plates in the vest.
Did you say in the vest?
The Kevlar. It's not Kevlar. Jonathan Lopez steps forward and states, There's zero Kevlar in the M69 vest, as modern Kevlar weave, as we know it, wasn't developed until 1971, 5 years after the M69 had originally been introduced. Sadly, the armour in the M69 vest is woven nylon or Doron, which, in practice, didn't protect soldiers in Vietnam against even some of the bigger thorns on offer in the jungle, let alone AK-47 rounds and Victor Charlie's homemade claymores. I read that verbatim, and it goes on.
Bless. Bless.
Completely unbeknownst to me, I actually met this person multiple times, and I thought they were okay, and then they weren't. I bet he's listening now. Watching,
notes
waiting.
And everything you've said wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, suck it. Suck it, Jonathan Lopez. That's right.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Just alienating half of our audience.
You've joined the Call Out podcast.
When I used to work in internet DJing when I was a youngster, well, relatively speaking, to certain members of the crew here. I basically had a show where I'd get drunk on air all the time, and half of the show was composed of me going onto the IRC chat room that was associated with the show and basically ripping it out of everyone that was listening live. And I had some of the highest attendance ratings of the listeners of that station of any other show that was there. People like to be abused on air. They love it. I bet Jonathan Lopez is screaming himself right now. Because he's just being...
People are abusing themselves online. Oh, no, sorry, I'm going to misheard you.
I think I need to finally move us on to our main discussion of the week.
It's safer.
Yeah, it's safer. I don't know if it's safer or not.
Probably not.
With me being so street today.
This past week, there's been a great deal of attention thrown towards the fact that a lot of mainstream games don't tend to have lead female protagonists.
Where are the ladies at, yo?
Yeah, exactly. That's what a lot of people have been asking. This was partly pushed on by a Penny Arcade report that came out recently.
Which is probably inspired by the Kickstarter Women vs. Tropes.
It might have been inspired by coming up from that.
It's around the same time.
There's a lot of research into them, so they might have been thinking, oh, we'll sort of drop it by once focus towards women and games kind of surfaces again. And then a lot of people didn't comment on it, like Destructoid, like the game industry doesn't want female heroes, blah, blah. Eurogamer did a piece on why publishers refuse games such as Remember Me because of their female protagonists. And a lot of this is based on research that a Penny Arcade report put forward in November, which was about why games with female heroes don't sell. And it's mostly due to the fact that it's quicker, the publishers don't support them. So, shall I get the figures out of the way first?
Yeah, bring on the science.
Okay. So, according to this Penny Arcade report, and this is paraphrased by Eurogamer because they paraphrased it quite 669 current-gen games which had protagonists of a specific gender, of these, only 24 were exclusively fronted by women. Less than half had the option of a female lead, including games where you created your own character. Male-only hero games sold 25% better than those with an optional female hero, and 75% better than those with a female-only hero. But the most damning part of the research was that these figures reflect the fact that games with female-only heroes get less than half the marketing budget of titles with male-only heroes.
Which is mad.
Which is like, it's like you go to a ballroom with a game going, oh, yeah, Remember Me, which apparently was refused by something crazy, like 5 or 6 publishers or something passed it by, but it was finally picked up. And sort of like going, oh, yeah, it doesn't sell. And it's like, well, if you're sticking less than half the marketing budget with these bloody games, then what you get, well, female lead games, what you get with a male-only hero game, well, what the bloody hell do you think's going to happen? You create a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because of course it's not going to sell.
I'm going to open up with a salvo from the Mass Effect 3 infographic. Did any of you see this?
No, I haven't.
BioWare released an infographic showing information based on what players had done.
Oh, that.
Oh, yeah. I remember that for 2. I didn't know they'd done one for 3.
They did one for 3. And according to that, I'm going to open this up and see what people think. What percentage do you think of all the players played FemShep?
I'll probably say about 65%.
65? I think that's been generous. I'm gonna go for a lowly 19%.
Ooh, okay. It was 18%.
18? What?
I was closer. Yeah.
18%.
I remember it was something stupidly low.
18% of all players that played Mass Effect 3 played as FemShep. Everyone will universally say that FemShep is the better character, better portrayed, better acted.
Yeah.
But only 18% chose, not. Yeah, bear in mind, with Mass Effect, it's a choice because all of the decisions that you make as a gamer are identical between the two. There is no difference. The only difference is gender bias that you apply to the character when you create the character. Only 18% of people chose, and I'll stress this again, chose to play as female Shepard.
Well, now, people who've done multiple playthroughs.
I don't even think you
track that. No, multiple playthroughs are counted in this. Okay. And so if you played as male Shep and then played Fem Shep, that counts as a play either way.
Okay.
Now, when they say, female doesn't sell, female protagonists are not as strong as male protagonists from a marketing perspective. If you're looking at it from the perspective of the psychology of the player, they're going, okay, I want to play a game. I want my avatar to be this or that or the other. Now, bear in mind, I'm not anti-female protagonist by any stretch, but if you're looking at purely from a financial perspective and anything else, and you look at this infographic, it says more than 1 in 5 people will choose to play a male character.
Yeah.
So more than 4 in 5 will choose to play a male character over a female character.
Now, the thing with that is, up until the third game, they'd only ever promoted the male Shep.
Mm.
At the same time, the developing community had stressed how good Fem Shep was. And also, if you ever go to a convention... I can't remember the name of the guy who plays Mel Shepard.
Or something like that.
Is that Mark Maher or something?
It's something like that.
Mark Meer, that's it. Mark Meer. Yeah. Mark Meer will never get anywhere near as much attention as the person who played Fem Shep. I also forget the name of, because I'm terrible at this game. who does the voice of Fem Shep? I've forgotten about that one as well.
I knew until...
Jennifer Hale. Jennifer Hale, that's it.
Yeah.
I remember when I was at PAX in 2011, and Jennifer Hale was doing a signing, autographing the cover image of Fem Shep, which they'd just chosen by online poll. And she was doing signings of this, and the crowd was massive because people adore Fem Shep. We say Mass Effect 3 was the first game to actively promote Fem Shep, having Fem Shep in the live action trailer, the CGI trailer, I guess. Having it on the box art. Actually having it on the placard stand things in stores.
actually having a designed character instead of just some sort of preset jumble.
Most people followed didn't just go with what was churned out as stock. I mean, most people edited anyway.
I've got my custom femme chef who has been with me through all the games, and she kicks ass.
Of that, I have no doubt whatsoever. But I was actually asked about this because I posted the infographic on Twitter. And I had someone basically question me about, you know, why is it that more people play male Shep? I don't understand. Femme Shep is better. And I actually had to sort of take a moment to think about that. You know, why did I pick male Shep? And the conclusion I came to was it's easier as a man to play a male character.
Yeah, I think that's a definite element. I think it's also just how the game is promoted. The fact that, you know, there are romanceable characters, so some people will want to, you know, stick to that.
I could give a slightly academic argument as to why men like to play as men a lot of the time.
It'll go on.
It's because, certainly in patriarchal Western culture and society, that being a man is represented as normal, as the universal, and so a man can therefore do anything. This tends to be shown by the amount of varied roles that men can have in cultural texts and in society. At the same time, the feminine, the woman, female, is shown as other. I mean, this is serious traditional feminist theory. And so a lot of the time is treated as different, as unusual, and therefore not something positive that you'd want to be. And so certainly in a pastime, which still obviously is played mostly by guys, if you've been brought up thinking that it's far more comfortable to be a guy than a woman, you're probably going to pick playing a game as a guy. And also the fact that certainly I would say in American culture as opposed to here as much in Europe, women are still perhaps not represented in as gender equally friendly ways as they could be. I mean, if you consider the fact that a lot of English speaking texts come from America, and so that means that they have a huge influence over here in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, whatever. They are predominantly, again, flavoured towards positive roles for men, negative and limited roles for women.
And obviously the same with kind of other ethnicities. And...
Yeah. So it sort of perpetuates the whole situation. Obviously, you can try and be gender progressive and stuff, and some countries are slowly succeeding in this whole equal representation. It doesn't matter who, you just do whatever. But at the same time, basically, the sort of genderization of society and the fact that male is seen far more often as something positive than female.
What I find interesting about that figure is that, I mean, because how many players do you reckon it would be female? So I would have thought it would have been like at least over a fifth. I would have thought.
Yeah. I would personally hope it was more than a fifth. At the same time, I wouldn't be able to say it. For me, there have yet to be any clear figures on the numbers of women who are playing video games that are not casual or puzzle games. The people who are actually, women who are actually playing games that you could sink more than a few hours into, console adventure, FPS, you know,
RPGs.
Yeah. I mean, certainly for the core gamers who are female, I would say that often there is a strong affinity with RPGs, especially ones where you can obviously choose to play as a woman.
That's something I was actually going to hit on. It's about the major RPGs all offer the opportunity to create a character that is based on. So we're looking at the Skyrims of this world, the Mass Effects, the Fallouts,
the Dragon Ages.
Yeah, they all offer the option to play as women, But I wonder, A, how many men would choose that, but B, how many women would choose that? I bet plenty of the girls would choose to play as men in the same way that some of the guys choose to play as women.
I'm one of them.
You would play as
a woman. I usually prefer to play as a woman.
I always choose to play as a woman if I've got the choice, because I started playing video games where I only had the option to play as a male character, and so finally when I started playing stuff like, well, it was before Mario, it would be Pokemon Crystal, where I was finally able to play as a girl.
This is and where I that, feel old again.
That was the first game I played where I could choose to be a girl. I was just like, wow, this is amazing. I will play as a girl because I haven't had the option up to this point in, you know, sort of several Pokemon and Final Fantasies later, which is what my early gaming years were mainly made of.
I mean, it kind of just goes to show because, I mean, all it is almost like sprites or polygon kind of differences. You know, it's a cosmetic change in most games. Obviously, with Mass Effect, you know, with changing of, like, genders, meaning that you can have relationships with one set of people, but not the other.
I mean, to be honest,
those like, intermix and match and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how it affects the story, I mean, to be honest, what happens with a lot of media texts is what you think of as the story, you will bring your own baggage to it. As, was it Roland Barthes once wrote, the reader becomes the author, essentially.
Yeah.
And
death of the reader, birth of the author.
Yeah, and certainly with like the case of the Shepherd is particularly interesting in the Mass Effect games, because other than the romances that are straight when you think about it, can I finish?
Yeah, sure.
There's the whole thing of the fact that having a woman in such a strong military role is unusual to experience because of the fact that women in the military over here, certainly outside of whatever the Israeli forces get up to, if they are allowed into the military, are not allowed on the front lines. So having Shepherd, when she's played as a woman, is interesting because it breaks all the cultural norms that we've been brought up with in terms of, and bearing in mind the representations of women in the military as like normal stuff, like what happens in real life, or at least vaguely like real life, are very limited and they're hard to find. So it's even more unusual and kind of messing around with the exotic to play as femship because of the issues to do with women in representations of being in the military.
I always play as guys because I'm a guy.
Can I also just say that? Okay, basically, when you start off, especially with the first Mass Effect, you know, you have obviously four options. There's the, you know, kind of default male, default female, and customized each one. The cursor is immediately on the default male.
That's true.
Yeah, that was my thought as well.
If that were to be kind of switched around every so often, so that would be default male first, and then default female first, and then default male, because obviously people that don't really care about gender, that just want to play the game, they literally don't care. They'll just be like, yep, start character, bam, off we go. I think it's only people that actually care about the gender of the character that you're playing that will actually go, shall I play as male or female?
Yeah, I would actually love to know just how many people, you know, they probably can't record, you know, this kind of thing, but how many people even moved the selection when the game starts up.
I mean, what would have happened if you accidentally pressed the, you know, the button too many times and it would have loaded up?
Yeah.
Pete? It sounded like you.
Did you get NHL 13?
NHL 13? Yes, I did.
Did that one actually have female characters again? Or not?
I believe it allows you to play as girls, yeah.
Yes, so that's two games in the NHL series now that you can play as female characters.
No, it's kind of...
You could play NHL 12, couldn't you?
Yeah, that's two... Yes, yeah, so that's what I mean. It's two games now in the series.
But, like, with RPGs, they're fairly female-friendly in terms of being able to play as them. But there's other types of games which, like, say, for example, first-person shooters. How many games that will actually allow you to play as a girl?
Part of the problem is the amount of those which are based off of military situations. And as I was previously saying, women are not allowed on the front lines. So
unless they're Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's you can't even get a realistic representation there, because it's not gonna happen. You know, you're behind it. You're safe ish.
It's difficult looking at the perception of women in the military, because they always seem to get a bad rap when they are involved in something like that. Like the whole Jessica Lynch thing.
What was that?
Jessica, I believe it was Jessica Lynch, was
She was a private.
She was in transport, and her convoy was hit, and she was captured. And basically, they went on a massive manhunt during the Iraq invasion.
Okay.
And they went on a massive manhunt to try and find her and bring her home. And it was a huge thing. It's like, oh, girl lost, you know, taken captive by those evil people from Iraq. Oh, hey, we saved her, isn't it great? Yeah, we brought this nice young girl home. So, you know, that didn't exactly help the perception of women in the military. I remember there was a statistic that came back, because you had a lot of support staff from the British military go out to Afghanistan and Iraq. And I remember in the first year after within a year of the Iraq invasion kicking off, over 100 women had to be returned because of pregnancy.
To be honest, though, that going really into real life, that one of my issues about having women in the military is issues surrounding access to contraceptives on both sides.
Yeah, it's whether you're in combat or whether you're in a support role or whatever, it's practically impossible to keep tabs on that.
Yeah,
which does make that really difficult, because, you know, there are stresses, there are things that will push you to the limit, and you will want to try and alleviate those.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, and the result is you end up with pregnancies.
I would say
it's not an inevitable.
If they made physical methods of contraceptive widely available in situations where you've got mixed genders going on, I think it could cut down. I'm not advocating a pill or injection approach there, because you'd probably end up with a bunch of women who would be useless as military personnel, because hormonal contraceptives are actually kind of messy.
You also have problems of you know, personal beliefs as well. People who want to abstain from those. And when you're basically saying, okay, we'll let women into combat roles or into, you know, positions closer to the front line, but only on the proviso that they basically, you know, for the short term at the very least, change the way they act. That's no, I would argue that is no more liberating than anything else, because you're imposing something on women to be able to do it. While there are logical reasons why you would want to request that, that doesn't change the fact that what you're essentially doing is limiting freedoms for the sake of combat effectiveness. Mm. And while that would be, you know, while involvement in stuff like that is something that people are striving for, you're striving for it, but you're having to make physical and social changes purely to allow that. So have you gained anything at all by achieving that?
Well, I think in the long term you would have, but I think this is kind of getting off.
Yeah, if I was going to drag it a little bit back towards things, the representations of the military in the Starship Trooper films.
Can we take a step back and go to Aliens?
And go to Aliens, yeah.
Okay.
Even that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that.
That was a terrible film, wasn't it? With you know, the female characters in.
Mm.
No one will ever watch that with bloody Ripley.
I mean, to be honest, I think we're being a bit unfair on games here, saying that it only affects games, because it happens in films. Like, I mean, okay, if it's a romantic comedy, there will probably be a woman who's a lead, maybe a guy, probably Ashton Kutcher or Josh Harnett, at least in the past.
Then they'll take the girl to see a Liam Neeson film, and it's all over.
But certainly in genre-heavy titles that are, you know, sort of your science fiction and your action films, your martial arts films, your fantasy films, those films will tend to have male leads.
You've reminded me of something. Right.
Uh-oh.
The movie Alien.
Yes, the first one.
The first one. You know the other female member of the cast, Lambert?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know that she was supposed to be transgendered?
I did not.
No.
She was a male to she was a male to female transgendered person.
Wow. Is that mentioned in the book at all, the adaptation?
I don't know if it's mentioned in the book, but it's mentioned in the personnel file that's featured in the movie Aliens on the screen.
I did not know that. Or if I did, I've long forgotten it.
So there we are. Further progressiveness in the movie Aliens.
I would certainly say that transgendered people have an even worse representation record in texts than women.
Yeah, I mean, by the same token, you know, you either have the obvious ones where, you know, you can tell that it's a woman that's gone into a man or man that's gone into a woman. But unless you actually bring it up, that's happened, people will just assume that you're either, you know, female or you're either male.
So it's
kind of a double-edged sword, really.
It's an issue of representation. Really, what we want is a world where whatever you play as, it's not an issue. The option's just there.
Yeah.
To play as such and such.
Especially in RPGs and various games where the character, the player character, isn't so much a character, it's just an avatar. It's a plot point.
I mean, I was thinking about trying to...
Did anybody have trouble playing Portal because you played as a woman?
I don't think anyone ever complained about that. If they did, they were probably on some very sexist kind of...
I mean, what about Mirror's Edge?
Mm.
Did anybody complain that you played as a woman in Mirror's Edge?
It's not an issue. You know, they never raise gender as an issue within the game.
I saw people complaining about playing a black character in GTA San Andreas.
Was that because they didn't want to play as a black character?
Their logic was, I just can't associate with that character. And I go, why?
In fairness... I found it very jarring at first to try and relate to 90s Compton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then, was that because it was 90s?
Well, A, it was 90s, and B, it was Compton. I'm from Buckinghamshire, you know? It's like the anti-Compton. That kind of scenario, you know, when you first encounter it, is jarring, and it's supposed to be jarring. That's the thing. It's an environment that is so alien to you. That it's supposed to try and push your limits in terms of trying to understand the characters and everything else. And that's what makes it quite an interesting experience playing San Andreas when you compare that with Vice City.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone knows Miami with the beaches and all that stuff and the whole Miami Vice thing. It's Miami in the 80s as well when it was really seedy.
Mm.
So when you play Vice City, it's been in movies. You've understood it. When did GTA San Andreas come out? It was
very late 90s. No, I'm going mad.
I mean, San Andreas came out in 2004. When did The Wire come out? The Wire was on its third season, yeah?
Okay.
Mm.
Now, The Wire is probably the closest I've gotten to understanding that kind of environment than San Andreas, and that's just because of the fact that it is such an alien environment to me that I just cannot relate to that at all. But then when the more you interact with CJ and all the characters in San Andreas, you really get a feeling of the fact that these guys are just people, whatever, you know, ignore all, you know, while they keep raising the issue of race, because that is an issue in 90s America. I had a similar realization when I was actually watching, of all things, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Mm.
Now, when I was watching Fresh Prince as a kid, when it was showing up, because they used to play it on BBC Two, didn't they?
It was one of the great highlights of 6 PM.
They'd play it like Wayne's World, the TV show, and then they would show Fresh Prince of Bel-Air amongst other things during that sort of time slot. And at no time when I was a kid did I ever recognize any kind of racial issue being presented. That never registered with me because I was a white English kid. I had no idea about black issues in America. To then be confronted with that as an adult, having gotten an understanding of just how difficult a time it's been for the civil rights movement and everything else in America, and how difficult it remains.
I mean, don't forget that Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was certainly made in the shadow of the LA riots as well.
Yeah.
Which would add a certain level of meaning to it.
I mean, all of that just, you know, completely washed over me as a kid, but now I understand.
I think to a certain extent that's kind of what actual innocence is. It's not about, you know, knowing where babies come from or anything like that. It's basically about seeing no distinction between, you know, you and somebody of a different color or somebody of a different gender or somebody of a different ability, you know, or disability
and,
type thing.
And to bring it round to a slightly academic argument again, actually there is no difference because this whole obsession with categorizing shit started mostly in the Victorian era. People were certainly not so concerned about gender as a thing prior to kind of like sort of mid-1700s and that. It was just, I mean, yeah, there was gender in that, but sexuality, it wasn't so constrained, it wasn't so pulled in as it had to be a specific thing. It's a very recent invention. It's like the whole thing with childhood is a recent invention in terms of our social evolution.
The idea that all this must be protected.
That only really kicked off again in the 1700s with the rise of the middle classes and the printing press becoming even more prevalent and the rise of literature.
I remember being told, I can't remember whether it was in history class or whatnot, but children were basically just treated as miniature adults.
To an extent, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. That could go up chimneys, you know.
Yeah.
Key critical things like that. It's just the whole this thing boils down to this whole obsession with categorizing people and things. And it's treating people like things, actually.
On the point of categorization, I was thinking before the show about categories of female characters in games.
Oh, dear.
And the four that came to mind were the true protagonists.
Okay, yeah.
So that, you know, you play as a female hero. It's not a case of distinguishing between, you know, picking male or female, like the shepherds and so on. That's another group, essentially, where you have the free choice to choose one or the other. It's just an avatar, and you choose whatever you like.
Almost like the genderless.
Yeah, essentially genderless, but you get to pick a female avatar. So that was, you know, the Fallouts, the Mass Effects, and so on. You then had the true protagonists. So I was thinking, okay, let's try and name a few off the top of my head.
Lara Croft,
Shell from Portal 2 came up.
I would go with Alex Roivus from
Eternal Darkness. Alex Roivus.
Yeah, I was also going to bring up Joanna Dark.
Yeah.
Bayonetta.
Yeah.
And Samus.
Yeah.
Well, Samus is shaky, of course, because for the longest time everyone assumed that Samus was male.
Yeah, so it's kind of genderless in a way, but
it's
not kind of choice.
It's been retroactively made a female character, essentially. But regardless, female protagonist, that's it. You've then got the characters who are not primary characters that you can play, but who are treated with great affection, not necessarily as damsels in distress, but are primary characters in the story, but you don't play as them, but are treated with a great amount of respect, admiration, and so on.
Say, for example, most of the female characters in the Final Fantasy series, like Yuna, Tifa, people like that.
Cortana.
Yeah.
Alex Vance.
Yeah.
You know, those characters who are strong characters in their own right.
Those previous categories, sorry.
Yeah, you know, they're all strong characters in their own right, treated with great affection, but you don't play as them. And the one that came to mind that was quite interesting were the primary characters, the ones you could play as, who have since been retired. And the two examples besides Joanna Dark that immediately jumped to mind for me were Jill Valentine and Claire Redfield.
Yes, They haven't had their own, it's just them leading the charge for a while.
Yeah, Jill Valentine's was Mass Effect 3. Resident Evil 3, sorry.
Yeah.
Who was the main protagonist in Revelations? Resident Evil Revelations? No,
there's two.
I'm pretty sure Jill Valentine was in there.
Yeah, but wasn't Chris in it as well?
I'm not sure.
I can never remember. But but at the same time, it's not a main series game, and that's part of the issue. It's when the Resident Evil ones, except for, I mean, I suppose Code Veronica, though, was kind of cool. But
that was mostly Claire Redfield rather than Chris.
Yeah.
It's Claire Redfield's game.
Hmm.
And that's the last time we saw her in a primary role.
Hmm.
I mean, sure, Jill and so on turn up in other games, and they show up in the movies, of course, but Jill ceased to be of any real relevance in the main games. She shows up in Resident Evil 5, as a character that's a plot twist, you know, and that's awful.
Mm.
Yeah,
you know, these are two very strong, very positive, very well appreciated characters within the fan base that have since been completely abandoned.
And I mean, there's obviously ones that are attached to male characters, like Sherry, obviously in Resident Evil 2 she was attached to Claire. And then in Resident Evil 6, she's attached to Jake. There's, you know, the ones that keep on coming, Shiva, who's attached to Chris in Resident Evil 5. And there's,
Don't forget Resident Evil 0 as well, which had, you know, Becky's Big Adventure, Rebecca Chambers.
Yeah.
So, you know, Resident Evil, traditionally, a series that had strong female primary characters.
Since 4, it's all got, even though I love 4. Well, mind you, at least with 4, you did have the whole Ada side story.
Yeah, I guess Ada goes in the same column as Cortana and Alex and all that lot.
Although, by the same token, she is more for femme fatale, so more kind of Catwoman character, where it's like, not entirely sure whether she's evil or good, and she kind of straddles them both. She's not like...
straddles.
Sorry. She's not... She's not a protagonist in the conventional sense.
No. I just want to go back to the trying to... How do I put it? Relate to people and based on gender or even race. And I wrote a blog post earlier today that was kind of looking at my final thoughts on Far Cry 3 because I finished it at the weekend. And I came across and doing research for the blog post, an article by, I think it was it, Kirk Hamilton, somebody from the Kotaku Australia team, and they talked about how you could make Far Cry 3 better, because there is actually a lot wrong with the game, especially in a narrative basis. And he was saying that the main way to solve the game was to create a Fight Club-esque scenario in terms of a twist. I went and said, forget this, let's have one of the characters that's already in the game as the main character, which would have made a lot more sense. And that was a guy called Dennis Rogers. And he was a Liberian refugee who moved to America, lived in America for a long time, served in the military there, and then ended up eventually coming to the island for a series of jobs and stuff. And he's really pissed off of all the negative forces on the islands. He's got a strong reason to go on a rampage and probably save people like Jason's friends and family in the process. And I was just sort of came to the end of the blog post. I was like, I bet the reason they didn't have him as the main character instead of Jason, who's an inexperienced 25-year-old white American guy who has no business taking on two small armies, essentially. The reason they probably didn't have Dennis was because he was black.
I'm not sure I agree with that, just because of the fact that the character of Dennis, you know...
I would have made him a little bit different, in terms of I wouldn't have made him so submissive to Citra. So
yeah, I mean, as a character, as he's been created within the game, he is inherently submissive and completely adores Citra.
But that was then just to bring him in line with the whole sort of noble savage stuff and everything they had going on, and oh, the magical savage, the tropes, racial tropes that were going on in that game. Yeah. But if noble they actually, savage. I mean, it was crazy that they had the whole background for him, the whole military and stuff, and the fact that he was from a country like Liberia, which has such a torn recent political past, at least in the past 50 years. And it's just like, wow, you know, you had a character with strong motivation and skills because of the military thing and that. And
I thought he wasn't in the military.
No, apparently he was, according to stuff. He wasn't. Like, that's why he's got his military jacket.
But it's fake, though.
It's meant to be from his ex-service days.
They should have gotten decent patches then.
Yeah.
only I would know this.
But yeah, it's just apparently, you know, he had a whole lot of stuff going on. He wasn't just somebody who arrived on the island later on in life. I think he would have had, in theory, more motivation for kind of like, basically like, Jason, what happens to Jason and everyone is basically the straw that finally breaks the camel's back. That could have been how it changed, but I think the reason that they wouldn't have gone for that is because, I mean, when was the last time you played a mainstream game? It wasn't necessarily Ubisoft, because they have this weird thing going on in terms of trying to do sort of ethnic representation. And when I say weird, I mean they tried to go against market. If they went an Ubisoft game, like a game that had a male lead who was certainly black, you know, actually African or something, it's a male lead.
Mm.
Any games? I can't think of any. I can't think of the last time, other than Left 4 Dead 2. Not Left 4 Dead 2. Yeah, Left 4 Dead 2 or Left 4 Dead, where I could play as black characters.
The Walking Dead.
I haven't got through The Walking Dead, but okay. But outside of that, are we starting to grasp at straws?
I just didn't think we'd be having this kind of problem at this point.
You would have thought that would have evolved past, you know, having, you know, strictly having white heterosexual males.
Yeah.
I suspect that a lot of me. Say that most gamers are male, okay, cool. And I bet a lot of those male gamers are non-white. You know, they're not white. They're of different ethnicities to the Caucasian sort of Anglo-American, Anglo-Saxon thing that Anglo-European, whatever, you know, white people. Yeah, there's probably a lot of people who aren't, you know,
yeah,
same names.
Why can't we just have a selection, even if it's just changing a colour, or, you know, selecting a different voice, you know, that kind of thing.
I suppose that some games, unless you make race not an issue in a game, then okay, if race isn't an issue in a game, then it makes sense having a choice. Same with if gender, if somehow in the narrative it's not brought up that being a specific gender or race is going to be an issue.
But in fairness, with the case of Far Cry 3, you've got a story where him being white is pertinent.
Yeah.
And you know, you're giving lots of examples where making Dennis the primary character and having a strong storyline there would have made sense. But I don't think it would have been as strong a story as the story they did have.
Yeah, but the story didn't make sense because of the fact that you had Jason, who's had no military training. Okay, his brother was in the military.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But
I understand why having a character who is completely inexperienced, flipping out and killing an entire island's worth of people, doesn't make sense and is a completely, you know, it's a logical fallacy. But the whole point of the story is having this guy who has none of that, who just by coming to this island and by being immersed in this kind of, well, I'm not going to say culture, it's not the right thing, but by going on this journey to this island and so on, ends up being capable and unleashing this innate ability to kill that's been within him the entire time, but which in his current culture, in his current civilization, as that white boy from California who's been completely mollycoddled and doesn't do anything except for go out to clubs and get drunk, would never have done. He would never have done that because the way he's been brought up and the way that he's lived his entire life says you don't do that.
Can I just have 2 points a moment? First one, I think more games should actually have interwoven narratives with different characters.
Okay.
So, you know, the ability to kind of play through as the main character the first time through and then open up like a you know, side one where you actually take control of, you know, a secondary character and, you know, kind of weave in the story. Those kind of games, awesome. I really like those games because obviously there's more going on the island than what one character will ever see. And second of all, I think part of the problem with arguments of within story is that it's not taken into account that it is basically a story. It's written. You know, obviously you could change things around quite easily. So by just saying, oh, well, no, you couldn't have had this character instead of that one, it's kind of a bit moot because, well, you could have. You just would have had to have changed the story. It worked, but it could have worked this way as well. If you know what I mean.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Okay. Well, bringing this then back round to the fact that there's definitely a lack of lead female characters, and just to anyone who's thinking the current Tomb Raider, the latest one, that is sadly not the norm, considering that it's also a franchise that had built up a cult following prior to the release of the latest game, and that the previous representations, well, certainly the 90s and early 2000s representations of Lara Croft were not exactly female-friendly in any stretch, to any stretch of the imagination, other than, oh, it's empowered woman, but yeah, it's like empowered woman on men's terms, but she's got to look hot.
And I think going back to the...
But not with the current game.
Going back to the sales figures, everybody knows that you can make anything you want appear out of statistics. We have to do is kind of twist and, you know, twist the figures to your, you know, to suit your kind of desires, as it were. And say, for example, with Mass Effect 3, how many of those players actually had characters from all the way in Mass Effect 1 or Mass Effect 2? Now, given that, you know, obviously the marketing, you know, for Mass Effect 3 suddenly had in FemShep, would those figures still be the same if FemShep would have been introduced in the first game with marketing?
Hmm. I'm interested to actually. I'm going to see. Did you say there was an infographic for Mass Effect 2?
Yes, there was an infographic for Mass Effect 2. I remember either reading something on one of the sites I've written for previously, or be actually writing something about it. But there were the similar kind of usage figures that they got through analysing data being sent to them online. I can't remember. This is many years ago now, to an extent.
I've pulled up the fun facts about Mass Effect 2.
What we got going on, man?
82% players male, 18% players female.
So it's consistent.
Marketing has had no effect whatsoever.
Awesome.
That's quite interesting.
You see, that fundamentally comes back to something I was going to say with regards to the issue of marketing. I don't think, I'm not going to use the word aggressively marketing, but going out of your way to market something as having this option, or going, yes, we have the male option, you need to, you know, you should play as the female option or the male option. Marketing one or the other or both, I don't think has that massive an impact, but, you know, especially when you're looking at a game like this where people know they can do what they please.
Well, I think to a certain extent, I think you're right, but there has been this technique in marketing recently, which is basically to almost divide audiences. I mean, it's a bit like latest Andrex or something like that, whether you fold or crunch. You know, it's kind of almost meant to create a dialogue somehow. And it's they could have had, you know, would you choose to play as FemShep or
Maleship?
The
issue with like the Mass Effect games is that it's not... it doesn't confirm with the figures that were in the original Penny Arcade report, was that the figures where the marketing was a problem was that it was female-only heroes get less than half the marketing budget of those with male-only heroes.
Yeah, that's true.
So if there's a choice, then whatever. But when there's not a choice, which is even more strict, because if you're certainly writing a really narrative heavy based game, you tend to perhaps limit the choices on character a little bit more.
I mean, based on some of the statistics that we've managed to pull up from other sources outside of this particular article, based purely on the usage statistics and the fact that people, you know, as a general rule, do seem to have a greater affiliation with male characters for whatever reason, be it innate sexism or whatever else, it surprises me that female games are getting half of the budget. Surely you'd expect it to be getting even less. Is there a baseline?
Well, they're not saying half. They're saying it's less than half, so that means that there's a varying level.
Yeah, it could go between, you know, almost like 0% to 50% off.
Yeah.
So, but you would have thought, though, if it was as low a figure as, say, like 5%, for example, that they'd be leading with that rather than saying just less than half.
But, I mean, this entire situation at the moment is kind of coming off the back of... there's kind of been recent videos of people that have changed the main character so that, say, for example, playing through Legend of Zelda, where you're actually playing as Zelda trying to save Link, like with palette swaps and whatnot.
There have been quite a few of those hacks recently, haven't there?
Yeah,
there have, but I think one of the most overwhelming things that is actually surprising to me is how many people are actually actively hostile towards that kind of thing.
It's weird.
Yeah,
it is weird.
To be honest, I'm just again looking back at the figures that we've got, and they said that of the sample, which was 669 current gen games, which had protagonists of a specific gender, and then there was only 24 of these were exclusively fronted by women. Well, if you're trying to do a data sample from 24, that's a pretty
that's true, why you'd
end up with a figure where it you'd get less than half the marketing budget because the sample's only 24.
Yeah, I mean, so, that's well under 1/24 of the games.
Yeah, that's why the sample's too
low.
I guess the other difficulty is that I mean there aren't that many tentpole games anyway.
Mm.
Like, you know, you think top tier games, you know, the 1%. So we're talking the big franchises, the Halos, the Call of Duties, the Medal of Honors and Battlefields and all of this stuff. When you think about it, the only female alternative to any of that is Tomb Raider. And that's still within the action genre.
Mm.
Now, I'll be when it's all said and done and the final sales figures come through for Tomb Raider, I'd be really interested to see how that stacks up against all the other franchises, because there'll be lots and lots of games that Tomb Raider completely outstrips in terms of sales. Now, if you're looking at that and going, okay, well, look, Tomb Raider, you know, ignoring the legacy of Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider is clearly a really well-made game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really clever. It's had a lot of time and a lot of love put to it. And it's more than just, you know, your average action-adventure game. Based on that, are we going to start seeing an upsurge of female characters being employed in games, knowing full well that female-fronted action-adventure games can actually make that $1 billion figure, as an example? The same way that Halo can, the same way that Call of Duty can, and so on and so forth. In Borderlands, I suppose. I mean, I know Borderlands you can select female characters too, but they're also restricted by class.
What's the situation with who you play as in Bioshock Infinite?
I'm not sure. I don't play Bioshock, I wouldn't know.
you have a male character.
No.
You can't choose. But then that's one of those where I'll let them off if that's the story. You know, if it's a rigid story that you're trying to tell in a particular way, and going by what they did with the original, BioShock, it plays with a lot of things. So I'll let them off on that.
I'm unfortunately going to have to say that is all we have got time for this week. It really is.
Oh, blimey, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So I hope you've found our discussion on this whole gender and, in essence, essentially anyone who isn't white and male being in games issue representation.
Just drop us a line on Twitter or something like that, you know, saying what your opinion is.
Yeah.
No, tell me please. I'm wrong.
So I think it's time for us to say goodnight. And it's goodnight from...
me, Peter Cooper. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/PeterBCooper. Facebook on facebook.com/PeterCooperAuthor. And lurking wherever Liam Neeson isn't, I suppose.
Or trying to.
Trying to, yeah.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have website paul-blewett.com and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at ek6891. You can also check by my website at ek-creations.com. You can find the Nerds Assemble podcast over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus Facebook and Google Plus under Nerds Assemble Podcast. And that's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm getting back to my Chew-Its. Night, guys.